नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 16 एंटाइटल्ड डिवाइन एंड डेमोनियक नेचर्स will be covering from verses 17 through 72 sorry 17 to 22 so the verse number on the board is 21 so we'll recite this and then we'll cover the previous verses also trividham narakasya dham dwaram nashanam atmanah kama krodha tatha lobha तस्मात् एतत्त्रयं त्यजेत् देर आर थ्री गेट्स लीडिंग टू दिस हेल लस्ट एंगर एंड ग्रीड एवरी सेन मैन शुड गिव अप दीज फॉर दे लीड टू द डिग्रेडेशन ऑफ द सोल परपट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद द बिगिनिंग ऑफ डेमोनिक लाइफ इज डिस्क्राइब्ड हियर इन वन ट्राइज टू सैटिस्फाई हिज लस्ट एंड वेन ही कैनॉट एंगर and greed arise. A sane man who does not want to glide down to the species of demonic life must try to give up these three enemies which can kill the self to such an extent that there will be no possibility of liberation from this material entanglement. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah नमः ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण परिष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नितानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासदी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो राम रामो हरे 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 कृष्णा आई वेलकम एवरीवन फॉर दिस इवनिंग भगवद्गीता क्लास फर्स्ट ऑफ ऑल आई वुड लाइक टू सीक द ब्लेसिंग्स ऑफ ऑल द डिवोटीज हू आर प्रेजेंट हियर सो दैट आई कैन स्पीक फॉर माय प्यूरिफिकेशन Secondly, I would like to thank my friend Balaji Prabhu, who have guided me what to speak, and he enlightened me how to read scriptures also. So I am very much grateful to him for that. So in this chapter, from the beginning itself, we are seeing that the Lord is describing about the various divine qualities. In the first three verses, he explains about the first more than 20 divine qualities, and then he starts explaining about the demonic qualities. And in the verses from 17 till 20, the Lord speaks about the various other qualities of the demonic people. And then finally, in the 19th verse, the Lord says that those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among the men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into the various demonic species of life. Attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demonic life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. So we see that how these demonic qualities lead one to the hellish life. So in today's world we see that although people are saying and they believe that they are living a very happy and a very prosperous life, but still everyone's life is a very hellish condition. For example, the best example we can see in our day-to-day life is our local trains in Bombay. From morning 4 o'clock till night 12 o'clock, it's a hellish life, those who travel in that. So there is nothing much else to be dreamt of in any other situation of life where you can be very much miserable like this. So actually we see in the previous verses that In the Purport, Prabhupada writes that God is all merciful. Then there may be a question raised that if God is merciful, then how the God is saying in 19th verse that he is pushing those people into demonic people into hellish conditions of life? How it can be ascertained? Because they both are contradictory statements. So to explain that, Prabhupada again writes in the further points that the demons who were killed by Krishna in the Krishna Leela, they also attained perfection through that. So not only that, Krishna is very much merciful on the divine people, but also on demonic people, he showers his mercy and he sends them to hellish life so that they can be again slowly upgraded into nice form of species so that where he can perfect his life. So, with this introduction, now we would like to see what all these qualities are which lead one to hellish life. So in this very purport, very translation, Lord Krishna says that lust, greed and anger, these are three demonic qualities which play the major role in pushing one to demonic life. So we see in Bhagavad Gita itself, in second chapter, that how Lord Krishna says the whole flowchart of how one starts contemplating of sense objects and then finally goes down to hellish life. The verse is like Dhyayato Vishyan Punsan Sangas Tejo Bajayate Sangas Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodha Bajayate Krodhat Bhavati Sammoha Sammohat Vrithi Vibhrama Smriti Bhramsha Buddhinasho Buddhinasho Pranashyati. While contemplating the objects of senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. So we see how in different verses, in third chapter also, in the fifth chapter also, Krishna emphasizes that the most dangerous or insatiable memory enemy of living entities is lust. So now in few minutes we'll see that how these enemies are affecting our consciousness, how they are pulling and degrading us into hellish lives. So we have many examples to be quoted here. For example, for lust we have Ravana. Ravana was like Jay and Vijay, who were there in the spiritual world. They came down to the material world to enhance the pastimes of the Lord. And also they got the curse from the four Kumaras. So Ravana emphasizes the personification of lust. So in the case of Vedavati also, he was cursed by her that if he tries to engage with any woman, then he'll be dead. But still, this lusty desires of his are so strong, and so he again tried Mother Sita to kidnap, and then he wanted to enjoy with her. But anyhow, by Lord's grace, nothing happened as such, but it led to his destruction overall, finally. Then we have example of Yayati. Yayati was a great emperor, and his wife was Devyani, and he had a maid servant whose name was Sarmishtha. So Devyani once received the message that Sarmishtha has also conceived children from Yayati, and hearing that, she returns back to her father's home in an angry situation. Then Yayati goes to her, pleads to her, but she refuses him. And Shukracharya, his father-in-law, when he hears this, he curses him that you will lose your youthful body and you will become old. Then Yayati explains to him that I have not yet been satisfied with my desires with your daughter. So Shukracharya started contemplating that if my son-in-law is not being completely satisfied, then how come my daughter will be satisfied? And so then he gives a adjustment to the curse that if you can exchange your body with your sons, one of your youthful sons, then you can enjoy with my daughter. And he pleads to few of his sons, but ultimately the youngest of all, Puru, he exchanges the body and Yayati satisfies his lusty desires with his wife. So we see that for so many years of being engaged in such a activity, still one is not satisfied. Pururava is one more example we see. Pururava was the emperor of the planet and he attracted Urvashi to come down from the heavenly planet to the earthly planet. And he enjoyed with her for hundreds of years. But still he was not satisfied. And finally in the Aila Geet, in the 11th canto, he mentions that how he had wasted whole of his life. And he has never seen, whether it was a day or a night, Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki jai. He was so much engaged in this sense gratification that he never thought of that whether it was a day or a night. And hundreds of years passed away like that. So we see from this example that how after being engaged for so long in such an activity, still people are not satisfied and they lament for whatever has been done. Most graphic example of this is of Ajamil, which comes in the 6th canto of Bhagavatam. Ajamil was a Brahmana from the Kankyavuja province and he was a very learned and scholarly Brahmana. But once upon a time, he sees a Shudra indulging in sex with a prostitute in the forest. And when he sees that, his lusty desires also get activated. And then he, for the rest of the life, engages with a prostitute. And he begets many children from her also. And slowly, slowly, he could not make out that he was growing old. And like that, he spent almost 88 years of his life. And the end, when the age was 88, and when the end of the life came, he could not make out that he has already grown old. So then, when I was in deathbed, he was very much attached to his baby child, whose name was Narayan. So at the end time, Antakale, he remembers and calls for that child, Narayan. Because he was seeing that Yamadutas were coming to take his soul out from the body. So being frightened by them, he calls for Narayan, his baby child. But the Vishnudutas, they thought that he was calling for the Lord. And so they came and there was a controversy between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas. But finally, Ajamil went to Vishnulok. So he was, by grace of what all activities he performed in his previous life, in the previous part of his life, he was saved by that virtue. Then we have example of Bilva Mangal Thakur. Bilva Mangal Thakur was a Brahmana by birth, very scholarly Brahmana, but he was also indulged with a prostitute named Chintamani. And the sequence was as such that his father had died and he was to be, the final rites had to be done. Then he escaped from that spot. And the situation was as such that there was a stormy weather and the river has also flooded. But in such situation also, the lusty desire of his was so much pulling him down to Chintamani that he jumps into the river and finally he reaches the other end. But he recognizes at the other end that the thing with which he was trying to swim over was none other than a dead body. And then when he reaches there, he knocks, but no one opens the door. Then he catches hold of some rope-like thing and he jumps into her house. And Chintamani, when she sees him, that with so much of trouble he has come there only to gratify his senses, she was also taken aback. And she tells her that if so much of determination would have had for the Lord, you must have perfected your life. And she orders him that you go to Vrindavan, you don't stay here, and there is no use of you being engaging in such a thing, and I'll also not have any relationship with you. And Bilwa Mangala Thakur, when he on his way to Vrindavan, he gets purified, he becomes a great saint, and then he sees the Lord face to face. So I'll not go into details, but the pastimes are there, you can refer to it. One more example which comes in my mind is of generally spoken is of liquid beauty. There was a woman who had a lover, and that lover wanted to engage with her in relationship. And she tells that, you wait for a few days and you meet me after 7 or 10 days, and then we can have a relationship. And these 7 to 10 days, she takes laxatives. And she passes a lot of stool, urine, vomiting, and she stores everything in a pot. And in due course, she becomes thin and lean, emaciated, and her beauty was gone. So when the man comes to meet her again, he asks her that, where is that beautiful woman? And she says that, I am the same woman. So he's shocked to see that how this has happened. Then she told that, my beauty, what you were loving, is there in those pots. So you can go and check it out. And when he goes and smells that, he's just frustrated from that. And then he realizes that what was wrong he was doing in his life. So we see that, like Maharaj also many a time speaks that, this lusty desires are like itching. We have itch and we scratch it. The more we scratch, it burns. And the blood also peeps out. So it's like that. So the more we give, like we are lighting a fire and you fan the fire and the fire grows on. It never ends like that. Similarly, the desire for sense gratification is so strong and deep-rooted in our heart for millions of lifetimes that one cannot remove it immediately. It needs a lot of hard work to be done. And on contrary to these, there are few examples which have given us remedies how one can keep away from sense gratification and perfect one's life. Best example we have is from Chaitanya Lila of Srila Haridas Thakur. Couple of times, once by Ramachandra Khan, a prostitute was sent and for testing him, and where for 2 consecutive nights she comes, and then Haridas Thakur says that I have to complete my rounds, and he keeps chanting for till the next morning. And then in the third day, she surrenders unto him and she becomes a Vaishnavi. Similarly, Maya Devi also comes in the other part of his life and she also tests him. But he surpasses all these tests because he was surrendered and he was always taking the shelter of the holy names of the Lord. Now, the another biggest enemy what we have before us is greed. According to Bhagavatam, Hiranyaksha is compared to as personification of greed. He helped his brother Hiranyakashipu to achieve more and more wealth and gold by defeating various kings and demigods all over the planet and universe. But finally, what happened? Lord Varahadev appeared over there in the waters of dissolution, and then he killed him. Then, in modern day examples, we see of those who are the refinery people, they're digging wells and they call it black gold. All over the world, the people are digging into the ground so that they can get something. And by that, they are polluting the environment also. So greed can never be satisfied in such a way. But still, people are hankering after one after another goals so that they can be happy with that. Then I remember one example when I was working in Merchant Navy. There was one captain. The story I heard from him that one person was the chief engineer of the ship, but he was earning in lakhs per month. But still, the greed for money and sense gratification was so strong for him that he landed up in smuggling business also. And he used to smuggle narcotics. And finally, at the US borders, once he was caught and he was put in bars for the rest of his life. So we see that how people being engaged in such a ghastly activity for money, which they call sweeter than honey. It's never sweeter than honey, but it's very pungent. And we have one more example of the European Union. I don't remember the name of the country, but there they have modified an environment where they can keep and produce all the seeds, save all the seeds all over the world. And they call genetically modified seeds. And they are planning that down the line, say 50 or 100 years, and now also they are giving these seeds, because these seeds, for few years, they grow in huge quantity. Production is a lot. But after 10-15 years, the land becomes infertile and there is no more production. And we could see the examples of that, how people in various villages in Andhra Pradesh and in Maharashtra also, in Punjab, some examples are there in recent history, that they have suicided because they were overloaded by loans because there was no production on their farm. So this genetically modified seeds, it's also a manifestation of the deep-rooted desire of greed to earn more and more and push others down. The final enemy which is explained in this verse is of anger. We have the best example of Daksha. Daksha actually hated Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva, he could see Lord Shiva from his external features, that how he was wearing deer skin and with snakes all around and bhasma on his body. And his companions were, associates were the ghosts. And he used to travel in crematoriums. So seeing this, he thought that how my daughter, who had led a life of so much of wealthy and a pleasureful life, could live with him. But still, she insisted that she wanted to marry him. And she got married. And once when Daksha was organizing an yagya, he did not invite Lord Shiva. So Mother Parvati wanted to go for it. Mother Sati, in that sense. And Shiva says that, no, you should not go because we are not invited for that. But still she insists and she goes there. And there, Daksha blasphemes Lord Shiva like anything. And when Mother Sati could not tolerate that, she creates a fire and she suicides in that. Hearing that, Lord Shiva got angry and his men, they also started to take revenge. And there was a war, battle, huge battle between them. And finally, the result was that Daksha's head was cut, beheaded. And but by Lord Brahma's mercy, he got the head of a goat through the sacrifice. So we see that how anger is so strong. There is a saying in my native language that tana kopame tanaku shatru, means our anger is our enemy, biggest enemy. Then we have example of Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni would get angry on simple things. So once he went to Ambarish Maharaj's kingdom, and that was the day of Dwadashi, and Ambarish Maharaj had to break the fast of Ekadashi, and in that moment, with 60,000 disciples, Durvasa Muni goes to take bath, and while he is taking bath, he realizes that Ambarish Maharaj had broken the fast. According to the etiquette, before feeding the guest, one should not even accept a sip of water. But the higher principle was that the fast-breaking time for Ekadashi was just elapsing, and so for that reason, he took a sip of water to break his fast. And with this, Durvasa Muni blasphemed Ambarish Maharaj. And when the Lord Vishnu heard this, he chased Durvasa Muni with his Sudarshan Chakra. And he traveled all through the three planetary systems, and finally he came and fell at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj and begged for forgiveness. So we see that how anger is also it's a very dreadful enemy for us. And until unless we try to tolerate provoking situations, one can be very easily becoming angry and he can be prone to disaster. A very live-to-live example, recently someone told me, is that in Bombay itself, a wife and a husband had a small child and they were quarreling. The wife was not able to pack the tiffin for the husband and he got angry over her. And then she said that I was taking care of the child. But the man said that you wanted the child. The lady said that you wanted the child. And there was a discussion, hot discussion for the child. And then the man said that, okay, if the child is not yours, I also don't want the child. And he threw the child from the 10th story building. And the child fell down dead. And the woman was shocked seeing the event. And she started running down to the ground floor. In the meanwhile, the husband also got shocked and he also jumped from the 10th floor. So by the time the woman landed down, she saw two dead bodies. One is of the child and other is of the husband. And her whole life was devastated. So we see how anger can be a biggest enemy which can create disasters in our life. On the contrary, there are examples how anger can be dovetailed in service to the Lord. The best example is of Hanumanji. Hanumanji, when he went to Lanka, and by see how Ravana blasphemed Lord, he got angry. But he dovetailed that anger by letting fire to whole of Lanka. Also, we have example of Lord Chaitanya in Jagai and Madhai pastime, where Jagai and Madhai, they offended Lord Nityananda Haridas Thakur. But still, the Lord utilized his anger to punish them. But by the mercy of devotees, they were saved. So we see that from few examples like these, how lust, greed and anger are the greatest enemies and which destroy our consciousness and lead to disaster. So now we'll see certain aspects from Bhagavatam, the quotes from Bhagavatam, where how we can overcome these propensities is being described. In the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Yeah. 7th Canto Srimad Bhagavatam, 15th chapter, entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. There, Narad Muni is instructing Yudhishthir Maharaj that how these anarthas can be overcome. I'll read the translation for the shlokas. By making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires for sense gratification. Similarly, by giving up envy, one should conquer anger. By discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. And by discussing the truth, one should give up fear. By discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. By keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles in the path of mystic yoga. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy. So these are few of the examples quoted in Srimad Bhagavatam. And now, I'll read out some few more things from this book, Formidable Foe, which is a compilation of a lecture by His Holiness Gaur Govind Swami Maharaj. So there, Maharaj speaks that since on our own, it is not possible for us to control this insatiable enemy, lust. So we need mercy. We need the mercy of Acharyas. So here Maharaj speaks that one should pray to the four Kumaras, Chatush Kumars. Sanat Kumaro Vatu Kama Devat, Dhaya Shirshamam Pathi Deva Hilanat, Devarshi Varya Purusharchanartat, Kurmo Harir Mam Niriyad Asheshat. May Sanat Kumara protect me from lusty desires as I begin some auspicious activity. O Sanat Kumar, topmost brahmachari, most famous brahmachari, please protect me from these lusty desires. You have conquered lust, therefore please shower your mercy and blessings upon me. Then I will be able to conquer this most formidable enemy in the form of lust and remain a brahmachari. Having seen these aspects from the scriptures, now we see that what will happen if we give up these three things. So in the 22nd verse purport, Prabhupada mentions three things, benefits of avoiding these three things. First, one's existence becomes pure. Second, one can follow rules and regulations enjoined in the Vedic scriptures perfectly. And third, one raises gradually himself to the platform of self-realization. These are the three benefits which avoiding these three things can award us. Now, one may question that how these things can be avoided. So there is a beautiful description which comes in 6th canto, in the first chapter itself. There is a conversation between Parikshit Maharaj and Sukhdeva Goswami. In the 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, already Parikshit Maharaj has explained, Goswami has explained to Parikshit Maharaj about the hellish planets. So now Parikshit Maharaj is a very compassionate soul. So he inquires that since we have explained about the hellish life, can't we save people from going down to this hellish planets? How one can be saved from going to the hellish planets? And in that conversation, Sukhdeva Goswami speaks. We'll see that. Parikshit Maharaj asks the question, O greatly fortunate and opulent Sukhdeva Goswami, now kindly tell me how human beings may be saved from having to enter hellish conditions in which they suffer terribly. Now, Sukhdeva Goswami has spoken to Parikshit Maharaj for 5 cantos. Say suppose 2 days or 2.5 days he has spoken. And now he wants to test the intellect of Parikshit Maharaj. So he already he understands that Parikshit Maharaj will accept the bhakti marg, but still he starts with giving him indications that how by karma kanda slowly one can be elevated from the hellish planets. So Sukhdev Goswami says that, my dear king, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in his life with his mind, words and body are not counteracted through proper atonement, according to the description of Manu Samhita and other dharma shastras, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergo terrible suffering as I have previously described to you. Therefore, before one's next death comes, as long as one's body is strong enough, one should quickly adopt the process of atonement according to the shastra, otherwise one's time will be lost. And the reactions of his sins will increase. As an expert physician diagnoses and treats a disease according to its gravity, one should undergo atonement according to the severity of one's sins. So here, Sukhdev Goswami mentions about the Karma Kanda section, and how by Karma Kanda, one can elevate himself and upgrade his life from hellish planets. So in this context, there in the NOI, Prabhupada writes in the first verse, Vacho Vegam Mansa Krodha Vegam, Prabhupada starts the purport itself with the concept of atonement, how Parikshit Maharaj is completely thrashing the concept of atonement, prayaschitta. There he says, gives the example of a thief. An intelligent thief, when he hears that stealing is a sin, he stops it. The second cadre is of those who steal and they are punished and then they give up. The third cadre is of those who steal, who are punished, and the second one is who sees others being punished, still, and then he gives up. The third one is he steals and he's being punished, but still he feels that I can do it again. So we see that proclivity for stealing in that thief is so strongly and deep rooted that although he is hearing so much rules and regulations, still he is not able to control himself. And there is an example which comes in the Pastor Vashkila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur. There was a person who was in the Yatra troop in Vrindavan, and he was a thief by profession, but anyhow he joined the party for the Yatra. But the whole, and in the night, his tendency was to open up baggages. So this proclivity was so strong in him that although he was in the association of sadhus, still he could not stop himself. And was also convinced that I should not steal from the baggage of the sadhus. So he just opened the baggages and reshuffled the things here and there. And in the morning when people were searching for clothes, they were finding their clothes in others' baggages. And then he surrendered and told that I was a thief, but that proclivity is so strong in me that I could not resist myself. And so please forgive me for that. And then one more example is of which Prabhupada mentions in Ishvapanishad is of the Christian confession. People who follow the path of Christianity, as Prabhupada writes, that for 6 days, from Sunday till Friday, they commit sinful activities. And on Sunday, they go to the priest, they confess, and they pay some fine and perform some penances, and they feel that they have been excused from the sinful activities what they have performed. And they start committing the same activities from Sunday itself. So atonement is not the process. Then Sukhdev Goswami mentions about the Jnana Kanda. How by acquiring knowledge one can elevate himself and then he can be relieved from hellish life. In the Karmakanda section, Sukhdev Parikshit Maharaj speaks about Kunjar Shaucha, elephant bath, how the elephant goes, takes bath, and when she comes out, spreads all the dust all over his body. Similarly, people who are taking to atonement, still they again go and commit sinful activities. So it's like Kunjara Shaucha. Then Sukhdev Goswami speaks that, my dear king, since acts meant to neutralize impious actions, so they will not release one from tendency to fruitivity. Persons who subject themselves to rules and regulations of atonement are not at all intelligent. Indeed, they are in the mode of darkness. Unless one is freed from the mode of ignorance and try to contract one action through another, is useless, because this will not uproot one's desire. Thus, even though one may be superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. Therefore, real atonement is enlightenment in perfect knowledge, Vedanta, by which one can understand the supreme absolute truth. So here he introduces about the Jnana Kanda section, that how by acquiring knowledge one can elevate himself. But in that translation, it is also mentioned that a sober and a faithful person who knows the religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins performed with his body, words and mind. There is a problem with this also. These sins are like dried leaves of the creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burned by fire, although their roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. So we, like in the forest fire also, we see dry creepers which are found on the ground, they may be burned, but the deep-rooted roots which are there inside the ground, when the shower of rain comes, they again germinate. So this Jnana Kanda section also cannot remove the root of sin from the heart. Then finally, Sukhdev Goswami speaks this verse. Kechit kevalaya bhakta vasudeva parayana agham dhuvananti kartayena niharam iva bhaskara. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by the rays. Dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree may be completely burned by ashes by a fire, although the creepers may sprout again because the root is still in the ground. Similarly, because the root of sinful desire is not destroyed in the heart of a person who is cultivating knowledge, but who has no taste for devotional service, there is no possibility that his sinful desires will reappear. But by the process of bhakti, one can remove the sinful desires right from the root. So now we will see that what are these sinful desires or tendencies which are deep-rooted in our hearts that lead one to commit the sin again and again. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami mentions about the whole concept. And he says that a person commits a sin, that is papam. And that papam can be divided into two parts, aprarabdha, as unmanifested reaction, which after some time becomes manifested as prarabdha suffering. Prarabdha suffering is one which, for which the results are being manifested. Like suppose someone steals and he is being caught and put in jail. So the papam is there, sinful activity is there, and again next is his suffering. But aprarabdha has another feature also, which is kutam. That is the sinful tendency, proclivity to perform sin. Like suppose someone has having a sinful life and he has killed 100 people in one life. So to overcome that reaction for that, he has to be killed by those people in next 100 lives. and he will be engaged in such a in sinful activity, because he was doing the same in this life also. So next life also he'll be, next few lives also he'll be engaged in such an activity. So that sinful tendency is deep rooted in his heart, but that has to be removed. So that, until as that is removed, the sin keeps recurringly happening. So like example is given, engagement in illicit sex, directly physical or emotional suffering, that is as prarabdha suffering. The other aspect is that increasing sexual desires, impelling future illicit sex and entangling in karmic cycle of suffering. This is aprarabdha, which will manifest in future lives. So now one will ask that if this chain keeps going on, then how one can cut this? How can one get rid of this? So Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Rupa Goswami says that to break this cycle of bondage, one should tolerate sinful desires and do not endeavor to fulfill them. Not being reinforced by unmanifest reactions, they will gradually dissipate and leave the heart forever. We may also examine this when we have an itch. If we don't respond to it, after a few moments we see that it has gone. But if we keep scratching, it will become red and then it will also peep out blood from it. So suffering increases in that way. Then one may also question that what was our real identity actually? Why again we have to come into this material pool and this chain of suffering has started? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Jivarya Swarupai Krishnaya Nityadas. So we are eternal servants of the Lord. But since we had the desire for sense gratification and we utilized our free will to happily enjoy separate from Krishna, we came down to this world. And this root cause of suffering is avidya, ignorance. And our true identity as Krishna's eternal servant. Srila Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, as long as one is ignorant about his identity, he is sure to act wrongly and thereby become entangled in material contamination. Uprooting ignorance is the best way to uproot suffering. That can be done by devotional service only. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami quotes different verses from Bhagavatam and Padma Puran, and to support his points that how these different steps like avidya, then bijam, kutam, papam, prarabdha, aprarabdha, all these, this chain can be broken. So I'll just read out a few of the quotes from that. This is about the prarabdha thing. To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme Person face to face, even a person born in a family of dog eaters immediately becomes eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices. If he once utters the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or chants about him, hears about his pastimes, offers him obeisances or even remembers him. This is from the 3rd canto, 33rd chapter and 6th verse. So in the purport, Jiva Goswami's commentary is mentioned here. By hearing or chanting the name of the Lord, or by bowing down to the Lord, or by remembering the Lord, the dog eater quickly destroys his prarabdha karmas of his life, which have produced his low birth and which prevent from him performing sacrifices. Then, in the Padma Puran verse, it's quoted that aprarabdha phalam papam kutam bijam phalon mukham. Karme naiva praliyate Vishnu bhakti radatmanam. For those engaged in bhakti to Vishnu, step by step the aprarabdha, kuta, bija and prarabdha karmas are all destroyed. Although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows and other such methods, these pious activities cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of personality of Godhead, he is immediately freed from all such contamination. This is regarding the bija, the seed. And regarding the avidya, ignorance, yat pada pankaja palasha vilasa bhaktya karmashayam grahitam उद्ग्राहयन्ति सन्तः तद्वान्न रिक्तमतयो यतयोऽपि रुद्धो श्रोतो गणस्तम अरणं भजं वासुदेवम्. The devotees, by the actions of service to the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord, can very easily overcome the knot of ignorance carrying unlimited impressions of karma tightly by action. Because this is very difficult, the empty-minded non-devotees, the jnanis and the yogis, although trying to stop the flow of sense activities, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. This is from the 4th canto, 22nd chapter, 39th verse. And Jiva Goswami also quotes a few verses from the first canto. Shrinutan sva katha krishna punya shravana kirtana hridaya antastohi abhadrani vidhunoti suhitsvatam nasta prayesha bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naistiki. So we see that how shastras support that how these sinful tendencies can be also removed. Now, before I could end, I want to speak something of those realized souls who, after by performing bhakti, have got liberated and they are glorifying the process of devotional service. It's from the 5th canto. Yasyasta bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarve gunesh tatra samasate sura harau abhaktasya kuto mahadgana manorathe nasati dhavato bahi. All demigods and their exalted qualities manifest in the body. One who has developed unalloyed devotional service unto Supreme Personality Godhead, whereas one engaged in material activities has no such good qualities. And then, in the pastime of Vritrasura, King Chitraketus, Lord Shiva speaks to Mother Parvati. Narayana para sarve na kutaschana bhi bhayati swarga pavargasya narakeshva api tulyartha darshanam. Devotees who only engage in devotional service to Supreme Personality of God and Narayana never fear any conditions of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation and the hellish planets are all the same for such devotees, one interested only in the service to the Lord. And then we can conclude from this that Krishna consciousness is the best way of salvation. So, there is one more great devotee who had composed few verses as prayers. King Kulashekhar in his Mukundmala Stotra, he says that Naham vande tava charanayor dvanda advam dhaito kumbhi pakam gurunapi hare narakam napanetum ramya ramam ridutanulata nandane napirantum bhave bhave hridaye bhavane bhaveyam bhavantum. So the translation is as: O Lord Hari, it is not to be saved from the dualities of material existence or the grim tribulations of the Kumbhipakam hell that I pray to your lotus feet. Nor is my purpose to enjoy the soft and beautiful women who reside in the gardens of heaven. I pray to your lotus feet only so that I may remember you alone in the core of my heart, birth after birth. In one more verse, he speaks, Divya Bhuvya Mamastu Vaso Narko Va Narakantaka Prakamam Avadhirati Sharadarivindo Charanope Marnovichintayami. O Lord, killer of demon Naraka, let me reside either in the realm of the demigods in the world of human beings or in the hell as you please. I pray only that at the point of death I may remember your two lotus feet whose beauty defies that of the lotus growing in the Saras season. So, we see that how great devotees are also praying for the lotus feet of the Lord. And we have few examples in Bhagavatam also that how people who, great devotees like Bali Maharaj, in Chaitanya Charitamrita also we have example of Sri Haridas Thakur, who have prayed not only for benefit of oneself, they also have acted for the benefit of others. Even Amrish Maharaj also took proper care of the citizens and he preached to them the science of self-realization, process of bhakti, how they can upgrade themselves from this hellish suffering and go back home, back to Godhead. Bali Maharaj, he also received the mercy of Lord Vamandev. We all know the pastime. And then Bali Maharaj was sent to hellish planets for service. And there Lord Vamana he appeared as his gatekeeper, as Trivikrama, and then he was constantly serving Bali Maharaj. Haridas Thakur also, he was conscious about how he can pray for the suffering souls of this world. And he appeared as Namacharya and spread the glories of the holy name. Even though he was a Mahabhagavat, learned scholar and a great devotee, still he came to render his service into this material world. And also we have Srila Prabhupada, who out of his causeless mercy has left, he left Vrindavan and he went to the West and he preached the science of Krishna consciousness all over the world. And thereby, he also transformed the hellish conditions of lives of millions of people into divine qualities. And Srila Prabhupada gave us a treasure house of Vedic nectar in the form of a very small formula, what many have been devotees quoting it, the ABCD formula, what they call it. A is for the association of devotees, what we have. So many devotees are here. B is his books, Srila Prabhupada books. Prabhupada came basically to give his books so that people can understand the science of Krishna consciousness and preach to themselves and preach to others and purify their existence. C is chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And finally, most lovingly, he gave us all diet, that is prasad. So everyone is hankering for prasad. So Srila Prabhupada, in a very small package form, he provided with us the whole nectar, which was what I spoke for last 45 minutes or so. Prabhupada just gave it to us in a small package form. So at the conclusion, I would like to conclude the points what I have spoken. We started with the introduction that how these demonic qualities and divine qualities are contradictory and how people following a certain faith of path have different results. And then we spoke about lust, greed and anger. We saw many examples from scriptures and also day-to-day examples. Then we saw the benefits of how avoiding these three things. Prabhupada mentioned the purport itself. We spoke about that. Then we spoke about how Shastras enjoin that how one can overcome lust, greed, anger in different situations, in different purports and translations, we have seen that. Then we have seen the conversation between Parikshit Maharaj and Sukhdev Goswami about how one can be saved from going to the hellish life. And then we saw how sinful tendencies, which are deep-rooted in the heart, can be removed. And we supported many statements from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Then we spoke about the glories of devotional service in a few verses from Bhagavatam and Mukundamala Stotra. And then we summarized this teachings of Srila Prabhupada, how one can perfect his life and go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Now the time is there for Kirtan, so we'll go for Shayan Darshan Kirtan.